Hi, everyone. We are back for another episode of the Hauenstein Center's podcast, Off the Stage. My name is Maddie Miller, and I am the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center. Today on the podcast, I get to interview the speaker of tonight's event, a collaboration between the Peter C. Cook Leadership Academy Wheelhouse Talk Series and the Frederick Meyer Honors College here at Grand Valley State University. I am joined by Faye Richardson Green, who holds nearly 40 years of broad-based leadership experience throughout different nonprofit organizations and Grand Rapids institutions. Faye, thanks so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for asking. You know, this is my very first podcast.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So this year's old. Yes. My birthday is in a week.
Oh my goodness. So happy early birthday. Oh my gosh. Wow. I feel so honored. I feel like you're like Grand Rapids famous and I'm your first podcast.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, we are excited to have you speak tonight and particularly excited for our students just to be able to learn from you and what you have to say. Why do you think it's important to do talks like this, share your stories and your leadership lessons?
I think it's important because there are lived experiences that people can learn from so that they gain the wisdom of someone else's experiences, good or bad. I think that those of us who have held leadership positions and have had successful careers kind of owe something back to those that are up and coming. And so conversations like this, presentations like this, help to continue the cycle of success for others.
That is so true. That is great wisdom. Well, like I said, I can't wait to hear your talk tonight. I was just telling you before this, we always start all of our podcasts off with our BOQ, which stands for Bowl of Questions, which are questions submitted by our students and people on social media. So you have picked two questions out. I'd love for you to read them and then tell us what your answer is.
So the first question is, what would your perfect Saturday look like?
Ooh, good one.
Wow. Having one would be the first part
to have a perfect Saturday.
Well, yeah, because I end up doing all kinds of stuff. I guess my perfect Saturday would be being able to sleep in.
Okay.
So many days I get up at the butt crack of dawn.
Yep.
And having, my husband already makes sure that I have coffee ready, and he makes
the best
coffee.
Oh.
He really does.
Wow.
He makes coffee the best
connoisseur.
Coffee. And so, so it would be that. But what would be even more perfect is that if he would cook breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And serve me breakfast in bed.
In bed with like a little tray.
Yes.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have to get up.
Well, I hope he's listening to this.
Yeah, he better be. But that would be the start of a perfect day. And then he and I both love to travel.
Okay.
And so to then be able to get in the car and go someplace. One of the places in the area that we really enjoy is the Gilmore Car Museum in Hickory Corners.
Okay, never been.
Oh my goodness.
Do I need to add that to my list of things?
I would. If you like cars at all, or if you're interested in learning the history of the U.S. through its cars, the Gilmore is a perfect place to go.
Okay, I'm going to add it to my list then. Perfect.
So that would be the perfect day. And then dinner out.
Okay. Love it. Any particular Grand Rapids favorite dinner out?
Yes. First of all, as quiet as it's kept, I eat out a lot.
Hey, I appreciate that. I also love to eat out. So.
And my favorite food is seafood. So any one of the seafood restaurants, we've gone to Bonefish Grill, the seafood company.
Yeah.
Longhorns has a really good salmon.
Okay.
Dish that I really like.
Yeah.
So any one of those places, that I'm always open to being exposed to something new.
Yeah. Hey, I love that. That's awesome to hear. Okay, let's hear your second question
and
your answer. The
second question is, if you could deliver one message to your younger self, what would you say?
This is deep.
Yeah, that one's a... guess I would say not to worry so much.
Yeah.
That you can do more than you think you can do well.
Yeah. Yep. I definitely get that.
I had a tendency to be just anxious about it, a lot of things. And so I would tell myself to stop, breathe, relax.
Yeah. I always wonder when people answer questions like this, like, I wonder if my younger self, like, would I have taken that advice? Even if it was coming from my own cell of future self somehow, I wonder if I would have taken that advice because I was kind of stubborn. Yeah, that's fine. Well, that was awesome to hear. And now we're going to just transition to some questions that I came up with. I just did a little research on you, and I'm just excited to hear. But I would just love to hear kind of just your beginnings. Where did you grow up? What were you interested in school? And where did you go to college and decide to major in and all of that?
So I was born in Mississippi.
Awesome.
My dad had family in Michigan and wanted the opportunities that would be available in the North as opposed to what was available to him in the South. So while my mother was in her last stage of pregnancy with me, my dad traveled North to make some connections and figure out where he might work. I'm told that his intention was to go to either Chicago or Detroit. He actually stopped in Chicago, visited with relatives there, and on his way to Detroit, ran out of money and ended up spending time with relatives in Grand Rapids, found a job, and
been here. That's.
And so at 6 weeks, I traveled with my mother to Michigan and have lived here ever since.
I love that.
So I lived on the southeast side of Grand Rapids.
Okay.
Ended up going to Sigsby Elementary and then Harrison Park for part of middle school, which there's a story I'll talk about later today about that.
Yeah.
And then went to high school at Ottawa Hills.
Okay. Nice.
So I loved that. For college, I really wanted to go to Spelman in Atlanta.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
It's an all-girls school. Okay. It's one of the historically black colleges. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go there, and my dad really didn't want me to go there. Mm-hmm. And the reason was it was too far. Not because, I mean, he really wanted me to go to college, but he wanted me to be someplace so that if there was a problem, whether it was health or whatever, that they could get to me soon. And at that time, you know, it was going to be a couple of days or whatever. So.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to Oakland University. Okay. I was accepted at Michigan.
Where's Oakland at?
It's in Rochester.
Rochester, okay.
Yep.
Cool.
And ended up going there because it was a smaller school. I had a couple of friends that were also going there. Mm-hmm. University of Michigan just was too overwhelming. And so I didn't want to be in that big, mysterious, overwhelming space.
Yeah, so, it is a big school for sure. Cool. Yeah. And what did you major in college?
Well, I ended up with a degree in communications. And this is one of the things that we talked with Shelley about a little while ago.
Awesome.
My intent was to become a reporter. I did an internship at the Oakland Press. I loved it. I loved interviewing the old gentleman who made clocks. That it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
But when I graduated and came back to Michigan, there were no jobs in that realm.
Yeah.
And so I met with someone at, I think, the Chamber when I was really depressed about what am I going to do for work. Mm-hmm. And I came into the work world in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And at that time, because of civil rights, both race-related and gender-related, this person I talked to said, you know, Faye, you are a twofer.
A twofer.
A twofer.
Interesting.
That going to any business, I would be able to help them check off two items on their affirmative action list. I was a person of color who was also female.
Yeah.
And so he suggested that I go to a bank. And since I banked at Old Kent, I went to Old Kent. I subsequently became part of their leadership training program.
Okay.
And spent 4 years at Old Kent, left Old Kent, and went to what ultimately became Michigan National Bank. When I actually went there, it was the First National Bank of Wyoming, which is in the city of Wyoming.
Yeah.
And they got pulled into the Michigan National Bank system, which I think is now Chase or somebody. I don't know. Banks kept buying and selling each other forever. And so I was a banker for about eight, almost 9 years.
Okay.
Had a friend who, do you want to know all of this?
Yes. Oh, okay. Oh my gosh. I'm like, I could listen to you all day.
And so I had a friend who just insisted I needed to talk to Steelcase. She just felt like, Faye, Steelcase would really benefit from you and you would benefit from them. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And so I didn't go. And so she pestered me for almost a year.
Wow.
And so I finally said, okay, I'll call. So I called, interviewed, and the interview went really, really well. And so the person I interviewed with said, Faye, we really love you, but we don't have any openings. And so I said, yeah, I knew it. You know, I didn't think. So so I said, okay. So my friend followed up with me and said, I talked to, and she named the person, and they really were impressed with you, really want to have you come to Steelcase. I said, but they don't have any openings. She says, well, just keep calling them. So I would, you know, every month or so give a call. And I ended up talking to another person. And this person said to me, yeah, well, everybody kind of wants to work at Steelcase. And so I was like, okay. And but I said, I did interview, and this is who I talked to. Well, that person called me back the very next day, said, I talked to the person that you told me about.
Yeah.
And we really want you to come in for a couple of more interviews. I think we've got an opening for you. And so they were just starting their own marketing training program.
Okay.
And I ended up being one of the first two people in this development program.
Yeah, so it was like not a position that somebody had held before. They were like hiring you for a brand new.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep. So me and another woman ended up being the guinea pigs for this training program.
Yeah.
And I ended up spending 33 years at Steelcase as a result of that.
That's awesome.
The good news is I didn't do the same thing for 33 years. About every 3 to 5 years, I was changing positions.
Yeah, that kind of is nice to keep it like fresh and new, whatever. One thing I thought that was interesting that you didn't touch on that I'm curious. So we have a beat writer at GV Next, Brian Vernellis, and he wrote a wonderful article about this event tonight and about you and whatnot. And he said in the article that one of your first jobs was as a first respondent or crisis. Is that right? Am I saying that right?
So not a job. I have been a volunteer in the greater Grand Rapids community for virtually my entire life. My first experience as a volunteer was a tutor when I was 11 for an 8 or 9 year old girl who was profoundly deaf.
Okay.
And back then, the goal was to teach people who were deaf to speak. And so there wasn't a lot of accommodations like there are today. So what he and I talked about was when I was in banking, because I didn't know much about banking, I was taking some classes at Davenport.
Oh, nice.
At that time, college. Now it's Davenport University. And I had gone into the ladies' room, and there was this sign on the inside of the door that said that there would be some crisis intervention training for a rape crisis team. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that time, remember, I was a communications major.
Yeah.
I thought, boy, this sounds interesting. So I called. I went through the training and became a responder for women and children who had been sexually assaulted. That organization ended up partnering with what was at that time a 24-hour crisis line mandated by the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. In this area, it was called Switchboard, and it responded to sexual assaults, people who were in crisis around divorce, they were depressed, suicidal, you name the challenge, and someone, and so I trained for that, did that for a little while, became a trainer, and then a trainer of trainers.
Yeah,
I will tell you that being a respondent, going through that training, was one of several life-changing events for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Wow.
Not only was I given the opportunity to be a lifeline for other people, I learned skills that I subsequently learned through my employment were reasons for my advancement.
Yeah.
That the kinds of skills that I had honed as a volunteer with Rape Crisis and Switchboard helped me move into leader roles at Steelcase probably faster than I might have if I hadn't had those skills. I do know that at one point I went into the manufacturing part of our company as a leader with no manufacturing experience. And the sole reason was I had leadership capabilities that they wanted to develop in some of the leaders within the manufacturing organization.
That's awesome. What a cool experience and just like such an important one too. Are there any like specific situations that were particularly like you think about all the time or that particularly influenced your leadership roles in the next phase?
So one of the things that I have tried to stay connected to were organizations that improve the lives of children. Yeah. Because the thing that was always the most heartbreaking for me were children who were abused either physically or sexually by adults. And so having to respond to the cruelties that adults, in order to get their own needs met, you know, sort of forced upon children, that is what stays with me. And so anytime that I can do anything that will improve the lives, the circumstances of young people, I'm committed to that. One thing that I will talk briefly about tonight is I am a birth mother, I've been a foster mother, I'm an adoptive mother, and I'm a stepmother. And so and I'm a grandparent. And so I just really love young people and have found so many of them in my life in different ways. So I have grandchildren that aren't technically my grandchildren. I have nieces and nephews that are technically not my nieces and nephews, but because of the roles that they have played in my children's lives or even my own life more directly, I have been influenced by them and they have been influenced by me.
That is so cool to hear. I'm like getting like choked up just hearing you talk about that, because that is so needed for these like really cruel things that happen to kids, and that's so important. One of the things I loved reading about you is your involvement in a lot of different community organizations that cover just a wide variety of causes. So can you just talk a little bit about why volunteering for different community organizations is important to you and why you feel like it should be a part of other people's lives as well?
Well, one of the benefits of volunteering is it lowers operational costs for all of these causes.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're talking about causes affecting young people, single parent families, whether it is affecting homeless, even things that were around some diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. Like for many, many years, I was involved with Institutes for Healing Racism, which morphed into Partners for a Racism-Free Community. Yep. Having people volunteer within an organization like that means that we are helping to educate and change perspectives without having to always worry about the cash to make that happen. You know, there's always a paid staff person, but that's supplemented by volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of boards in the nonprofit world need people with experience and expertise to help those organizations function effectively.
Exactly.
You know, because they can help, they can bring their lived experiences, their business experiences, their family experiences into those organizations to help them just grow and do what their mission is.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a faith-based organization, but again, volunteering helps us respond to the greater community's good.
That is so true. I've actually really never thought about that like that. When we donate to a cause, but not only our money, but then our time, it helps get the true resources that needs put towards things that really like matter. That's a really cool point. You just mentioned diversity, equity, inclusion. In that article I mentioned earlier, it said that you do a lot of work surrounding that. And I would just love to hear from you, like, as someone like me or people listening who really wants to deepen their understanding of this, and particularly how it relates to anti-racism, what kind of, like, attitude or posture do you feel like people need to first show up with? Like, what kind of, how do I need to present myself in order to be ready to handle, you know, deepen my understanding of this issue and then, you know, learn how I can be better or whatnot?
Actually, you just use a word that I think is key, which is learn. I think that the first thing you need to do is present yourself as curious, as a learner.
Yeah.
What's hard sometimes is to put defensiveness on hold because all of us think of us or want to think of ourselves as good people.
Yeah.
We want to think of ourselves as fair-minded. We want to think of ourselves as people who give other people chances, right? Mm-hmm. The reality is all of us are biased.
Yeah.
All of us have prejudices. All of us have stereotypes. Those biases, those prejudices, those stereotypes oftentimes get in the way of us learning about others. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I'm doing this particular class, you know, leading others in an othering world. Mm-hmm. It's I want people to recognize how their biases may be playing out with others in a diverse world, and if they're in any kind of leader role, and it could be with your friends, on a sports team, in a job, if you don't take a step back and take a look at what are my biases, what are my prejudices, what are my stereotypes, you could be perpetuating wrong images of people that you interact with and inadvertently cause harm. Yeah. And so for me, taking a learner's mindset that says, I'm going to learn about me first, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to learn what I don't know about others so that I can be more open-minded and really much fairer than what I might be otherwise without challenging myself. So, you know, learn, self-challenge, mm-hmm. Become an ally when appropriate. I have to tell you one little story about allyship, because I've been thinking about my presentation for later today, and I don't think I'll tell this story tonight.
Oh, great!
But my I have two sons, one birthed, one adopted.
Okay.
When my birth son was about 3 years old, my husband and I lived in an apartment complex, but it was townhouses, so it wasn't up, it was side by side.
Okay. Yep.
And we had neighbors. The wife was Canadian by birth. The husband was from Michigan.
Okay.
And we became really good friends with them. She was the more extroverted of the couple. He was very much an introvert, so he usually was very quiet. Well, one day my son was outside riding on a big wheel, so we're back in 70s.
Yep.
and this neighbor, Bob, his name was Bob, was leaving his home to go someplace. And I was in the house. The front door was open, so I could hear my son outside. But I heard this like commotion, so I go out, and Bob has literally grabbed a young boy off of his bicycle, and he's got him by his collar, and he's asking him, "Where do you live? I'm going to talk to your dad." And I'm like, "What happened?" And what had happened was my son was on the sidewalk in front of our home riding his big wheel. This other kid, who was 10 or 11 years old, came pedaling through very quickly on his bicycle and decided my son shouldn't be there, and said, "You little N-word, get out of the way. You're in the way." And so Bob heard that, grabbed him, and took him to talk to his parent. Now, I didn't go with him, but when he came back, I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I know where the boy gets it from. His dad's a jerk." But I was so appreciative that this man, who really didn't know us all that well yet, had the presence of mind to act as an ally for my three-year-old son.
Yeah.
Now, my son didn't know quite what was going on, but I, as his mother, did.
Yeah.
And we were able to tell my husband later what had happened. And I just have always appreciated that. And what people don't fully understand is how comforting it can be when you know someone's got your back. Someone is willing to be an ally on your behalf, especially if you are being harmed because of a characteristic over which you have no control, whether it's an ability, disability, whether it's sexual orientation, whether it is an accent because you are an immigrant of some sort, whether it's because you're a young person or an old person. Mm-hmm. But having someone be willing to advocate and, you know, ally with you is perfect. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's that idea of friendship and community, knowing that people are going to support you in what you do, especially when other people are not acting very kindly. That's so true, and that is important.
And allyship only happens when people take the time to suspend those biases, suspend those stereotypes that may be shaping their worldviews in a way that they can learn about others, so that they can interact differently with others.
For sure. That's great. That's so cool to hear. I have two more questions for you.
Sure.
So the second to last one is just kind of random, but I was wondering if you have any books or podcasts or articles to recommend to our audience today. Something you've listened to or watched recently or read. Any recommendations for anything? I always like to ask.
Well, podcasts I don't do.
Okay, yeah.
Because I just think about that.
Yeah.
I just have started to pay attention. And like I said, this is my first one.
Yeah, I'm so honored.
But TED Talks.
Yeah.
There are TED Talks on any number of topics. I love TED Talks. And so some of the TED Talks are on leadership. Some are on diversity, equity, et cetera. You know, Simon Sinek, Brené Brown.
Yeah.
I wish I had put some thought in that before, because there's several. Yeah. I'm just losing it right now. One of the books that I have read, and now I'm refreshing myself on, is the Inclusive Leader.
Okay.
There's so much out there. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of magazine articles.
Okay.
Either through Essence, Ebony, Entrepreneur, Inc., because they both provide insights into, because my specific concern around diversity, equity tends to be race and gender.
Okay.
Mostly.
Yeah.
I tend to focus more on that, but I've dealt with all of the different characteristics that people carry that create tension, you know, in our world. And then from a leadership perspective, I find Inc. and Entrepreneur magazines just so full of information. And so I'm actually going to be using some of those articles in my class.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. I love it. Well, that is great. I also am a fan of TED Talks, so that's really cool to hear. My last question for you is actually just how I end all of our Off the Stage podcasts with the same question, and I just always love hearing people's responses, and that is just, what advice would you give to somebody wanting to have kind of a similar career as you? So you've done a lot of leadership within Steelcase and other organizations. What advice would you give for somebody wanting to be like, hey, I want to do kind of what you did?
So this is interesting. So I've had a couple of speakers come in to my class already. One of them left his business cards.
Okay.
Right? Uh-huh. And several students, why would I need that business card?
Yeah.
I snatch up business cards still.
Wow.
Because you never know when you might want to pick up the phone and have a conversation with someone.
Yeah.
And there are so many established professionals who want to interact with people who are newer in their careers.
Yeah.
And so I would say be open to finding mentors, coaches in both expected and unexpected places.
Okay.
You know, learn from what other people have done. If you've heard somebody talk, send them communication through social media or through email if that's possible. You know, call them up at their companies. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to learn more about someone who has a job in communications, call up a station that you listen to or that you watch and just say, I'm trying to learn more. Who might I talk to? I mean, it can be as that, or it could be, is this Faye Richardson Green?
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard you on a podcast.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could meet for coffee or something.
Uh-huh.
I have done that. I have had people that I know suggest to somebody that I don't know that we get together.
Yeah. Oh, that is so, that's really cool to hear, especially like for me, like thinking about my career. This is my first job out of college. So like there's a lot of places and things I want to do as far as my career, but it's not always clear cut. And I feel like it comes a lot from connections. So
absolutely,
that's important. Shelley,
in this building,
yeah,
would be someone that you should, if you don't already have a relationship, yeah, with them, you probably do, but that would be someone I'd develop a relationship. Ask, yeah, her. Who does she know in this profession,
yeah,
that it would make sense? And that's what you do. You just sort of build this tree,
yeah,
if you will, of connectivity, so that you end up talking to the people who can offer advice,
yeah,
or a further connection that can get you where you want to be.
Yeah, for sure. That is great advice for me who's doing this, but anyone who's listening. It's never too late to, you know, make connections and do stuff like that. So that's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. This was so fun, a great way to start my day. And like I said, I'm excited to hear you speak tonight.
I really appreciate this. This,
yeah,
has been fun for me as well.
Oh, good. Well, good. For those of you listening, we've referenced Faye's presentation that will happen tonight. But by the time you're listening to this podcast, it will have already happened. But good news for you is that we record all of our events, and they're always available on our YouTube channel. So you can go to gvsu.edu/hc/FayeRichardsonGreen to watch or listen in podcast form or on YouTube, Faye's presentation at the Wheelhouse Talk Frederick Myers lecture series tonight. Again, thank you so much for listening to our podcast, Off the Stage. Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.